permission, I'd like to call this meeting of the Utility and Sewers Committee to order here at 4:30 p.m. on the 25th of August, and I would ask the clerk to call the roll of members present.
Tracus?
Present.
Sinek?
Here.
Fabreeka?
Here.
Very good. We are a full committee, and the first item on our agenda is the discussion of the consumer cost saving strategies with a firm known as First Energy Advisors. This was a request from the mayor and Dennis, and I'm Hello. Happy to turn the meeting over to them for their enlightenment on this topic.
Okay, I will you, send Chair, you an invite in 1 second, okay?
What we have is an opportunity here to make sure that our customers, our commercial and our residential consumers, are given the best possible deal in terms of energy costs. And so we have with us, I believe, Dennis, you could speak more in length in terms of your discussions with Lori Rader from First Energy Advisors and how she can help us bid many suppliers and how she can end up saving our community, our constituents, money in the process.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. We are dealing with currently, our current contract has been with Tom Day of Emerald Energy. First Energy Advisors is a new group that came on board that will, basically they will, on our behalf, the City of Independence, they will seek bid prices for our electric. Our current contract expires February of 2021. Lorraine will talk about that, and she will also talk on the opportunity that we have for the residents and commercial businesses throughout the city and the advantage we could gain by working through them. So, Debbie, if you can let Lorraine speak.
Yep, she is on the line.
I see she's on board, so.
Yep, she is. Lorraine?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, Lori, okay. Can you hear us?
Lorraine, hi. We can hear you.
Just want to make sure everyone can hear me.
That's affirmative.
Go ahead, Lori, we can hear you.
Dennis, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I think my connection's not great, so I apologize, but I'm going to start off by just introducing myself. I'm Lori. Hello?
Go ahead, Lori.
I'm Lori Rader from First Energy Advisors, and sorry, okay, are we good? Is everybody good now?
We're good. Continue.
Okay, sorry. Again, I'm Lori Rader from First Energy Advisors. My company, I'm an affiliate of First Energy, and as an affiliate, we've been introduced to the city to look at your electric accounts. We've had a long-standing relationship with the City of Independence. First Energy is a very good relationship with the City of Independence, and we're proud to be working with you in a partnership to try and save the community money on its electric bill. There's other people who can do this. I know you had a current advisor helping you. A little bit of difference with us is my team's been doing this for a really long time. As a supplier at First, we have a ton of expertise, probably 100 years of experience between the five of us. And what we do is we go out and as a supplier, we were able to work with agents. We saw both sides of the contracts that we worked with, and we saw what the agents were doing in general. And when Energy Harbor was separated from First Energy, my group came back to First Energy and said, we will do that function, we will be that agent, and we will make sure that we understand what our customers' needs are, find the best suppliers, and bring that mix together at a reasonable price. And that's the most important thing that we do. We have a ton of expertise, and behind us we have the power of the First Energy Shared Services. So energy efficiency groups, our communications group, we have a legal team that works with us, we have a product team that works with us, and we also have people who help us monitor the market. So we're able to understand pricing dynamically any day of the week. And again, we have a lot of experience understanding what contracts look like because we've seen them from very different sides. And so we did look at your load, and Dennis, I think we put a plan together. We did bid out about 9 or 10 accounts, and your contract is up for renewal in February of 21. And this is a contract for your electric load for you know, your community buildings like your police station, your city hall, the field house, whatever else is in that load that you gave us. And we were able to go out to multiple bidders. We used an electronic partner to try to make the bid even wider, as wide as possible. I don't think very many agents have an electronic or digital platform where we send it out to as many as possible to bid on your load. We did that. We know that you're targeting for a September 8th or 9th contract sign, or at least to look at pricing then, and that's what we plan on doing. The schedule right now for that load is to provide some what we would call refresh pricing on the 28th of August. On the 31st, we're going to have a list of competitive bidders, and then by Friday, September 4th, we'll ask for another pricing refresh and ask suppliers to hold that price, and if that pricing is, and the terms are what we have advised and what you've agreed on, then we'll ask for a contract, we'll review it and make sure that that contract would be ready for signature at a council meeting around September 9th. But again, all of this is working hand in hand with you and making sure that the contracts are favorable and that we're looking at the right conditions for signing. If you don't feel comfortable signing them, the contract actually does renew in February, and there is time to look at other bids, and we can ask for refresh pricing later if we don't feel that the pricing is good. But right now, that's the schedule that Dennis and my employee, Lance Bollander, have worked through to try and help you with that commercial load.
Lori?
So, I don't know if you have any questions, Lori? But what we do, what kind of services we provide, or anything about First Enterprises.
Yeah, this is Jim yes. Trakas. I'd like to ask a few questions. So first of all, Dennis, to you first. Mr. Day, we no longer are utilizing his services. Was there just a mutual on that, or what was the purpose of bringing in a new vendor?
Well, you know, their contract expires at the February of 2021. You know, the mayor and I had some discussions, and we just thought we were going to test the waters, see what else other opportunities are out there. In the way that we were approached by First Energy Advisors, they work on our behalf as a consultant, similar to what CBIZ does. What they will do is they will present to us a 1, 2, or 3 year price that, you know, we would then present to council, and, you know, council would make their decision based on that, if they think it's something we should exercise or if we should just, you know, hold off. And then we could do it again, and we could ask for them to reset the pricing again for the October meeting and so forth. And the one advantage with First Energy, because they're working in a just like a five-day price hold, the prices are much more competitive than what we found with Emerald, because Emerald, you know, deals, they're looking long-term, and they're looking to place a larger, I guess, customer base.
Therefore, they have to stretch that price out, and the longer you have to exercise the contract, it affects the price. The price gets more expensive. I don't know if I explained that. Maybe Lori can do a better job explaining that aspect of it.
I think I could understand that part of it. So our current is this Emerald. Second question for you, by way of follow-up, and I'll let obviously anyone else who wants to ask questions, but I had a couple specific questions. So with respect to this, this is only for city buildings? What's the universe of that we're looking at here? And if this contract expires in 2021, are we allowed to work with First Energy Advisors on this? Are we currently under contract? And how does that work?
Mayor, you might be able to address that better. I believe that we did enter into an agreement for First Energy to say, to operate as a consultant to the city and source our city buildings or city properties. This doesn't in any way tie into our residential customers, but there is an opportunity for us to also work with First Energy to assist us on the residential side. I've done some research and looking into NOPEC, and we've been involved with the a number of years. And after I did my research in that, NOPEC is might not be the best opportunity for the residential side.
Okay, those were my questions. Does anyone else have any questions?
I do.
Councilwoman Capusta.
Yes, thank you, Jim. I do have a few questions. I remember reading back, and I believe it was around January or so of this year in Cranes, when they were talking about First Energy emerging from bankruptcy and that this advisory group would be formulated. So when you talk about 100 years of experience, am I correct to assume that is not in this same capacity, this broker type capacity, however?
Yeah. We were working on the buyer side, where we did see brokers enter into contact, and we processed the contact. So our experience is just, yes, it is a little bit different in the past, but we actually have seen both sides. So I think that adds up to what we do, in that we've seen agents who only represent one supplier. We've seen agents that charge high fees. We've seen agents that are reasonable. We tend to want to be the agent that provides not only a reasonable fee, but one that provides a ton of expertise on the market and how to help people.
Okay. And I remember reading also that the Ohio Consumer Council had voiced some concerns, and this was on the residential side. I realize that, but I'm still interested in asking this on behalf of consumers, because they felt there might be, with consumers at least, some confusion with the First Energy name, and also some potential issue. Am I correct? Does First Energy still own the three regulated utilities of Ohio Edison, Toledo Edison, and Cleveland Electric?
First Energy does have the three utilities. We are also an affiliate, and our name is we're able to use our name and any of our affiliates. The utilities have
Sorry, you're fading out a little bit, Lori.
I'm sorry. Our company, First Energy, is a corporate, and there are affiliates. And Ohio Edison is an affiliate, Cleveland Electric is an affiliate, Toledo Edison's affiliate, we have the four affiliates in Pennsylvania, and my First Energy Advisors is also an affiliate. So we are all affiliates.
And in looking over some things on your website, it said that there was a question and answer part, and it says, do customers or suppliers pay your advisory consulting fees? And it does say that, it's usually the power supplier, but it said also that there are instances where the customers prefer to pay First Energy Advisors directly for their services. Could you explain a little bit about maybe why in that case?
So when I have run programs in some of the communities, some of the very large communities in Illinois, those communities prefer that it just be a set fee, and they just asked them to run the program, to run what we would call a request for proposal, and that's all they wanted the agent for. That didn't include services of upkeep or making sure that, I tend to do not just industrial load, I also do what we call aggregation load. In Ohio, there's a lot of upkeep with aggregation services, but there are instances where a community could choose to say, I only want you to run a bid process. And I think you've probably been involved with consultants that way. And they just charge you a fee and the community pays the fee. And that's the end.
May I ask also a listing of your communities in Ohio that are part of your client base currently for this services that we're talking about?
So right now we are a startup and we've been here for a year. We've been working with various clients. On the community side, I have just signed the city of Youngstown and the community of Jackson Township. Lawrence Township, that I'm in conversations with several others for their May renewal. We just landed the Lordstown contract in Warren, and we have a fire suit out in Geneva and a couple other clients that are smaller, and I'm not sure exactly how many more on the small commercial side, but I will say we don't have a full client base compared to some of the other agents, but in my past, I've had hundreds of communities that I work with, and my employees have had hundreds of clients that they serve as a contract. So we are building up our list, and we are working hard to make sure that our customers are served at that same level, and we do have experience in that.
Thank you.
Okay, Laura, why don't you continue? One other question I did have for you, Laura, was
sure.
What do you base the bidding process on? Can you provide some samples of what, you know, are you looking at strictly price, or is it the type of power being generated? You know, obviously baseload power means a lot to assure that there's a steady supply and that we don't have interruptions. I mean, just was curious, what are your, when you go to bid, what type of variables are you asking for?
So one of the first things that we do look at is what you want. And our job is to make your job easy. So if there are a lot of communities that prefer all their power to be renewable, and we can go to renewable sources, up to the market, all the suppliers, but it's first the supplier list. So there are suppliers out there who have good financials, who have medium financials, who have bad financials. So we want to weed out suppliers with bad financials. We want to make sure that the people who know how to keep the load and who have done this in the past. So that's part of the process. We have good contracts, and we make sure those contracts are in place and are fair. As far as generation, that's up to you as a community. Prefer to have that type of generation. Suppliers that tend to have baseload tend to be in this market a lot longer. There are some others that are out there that just trade in the market, and those tend to be a little bit riskier. I know that Direct, your contract was with Direct does not have baseload, but they were just purchased by NG. And we will have relationships with NG. We're signing a contract with them. So, again, it's a wide sourcing. We can work with people who have that type of baseload, or we can work with renewable. And I guess Mountain Harbor advertises that they're perfect because they're. So those are kind of the choices that you have out there, and we can work to direct that. Generally, we just get bids from all of them, and we look at the stability of the company. Does that answer your question?
It sure does, thank you. I'm a big believer in baseload power.
So, Mr. Chairman, the bottom line is that we believe that in our review that FirstEnergy Advisors, with Lori's experience and her team, will give us a more robust position, competitive, create more competition, which should lower our price. That's the goal, and that's why we're hoping that if they fulfill their end of this arrangement, it's going to be good for the City of Independence long term.
It sounds like it. Any other questions?
You know, if I might just interject, you know, briefly here, in, you know, the thought process behind FirstEnergy Advisors is they'll take our energy load out, they'll bring us back multiple offers, and those offers will be held for a 5-day period. At one point in time, council would have their privilege to either accept that offer or just say, hey, no, we're not interested, and we can walk away. And that was one of the things that was interesting about this concept, is because it in no way are we obligated or bound by any proposal that FirstEnergy Advisors puts forth. By trying to set the price, take a snapshot in time, it does also provide the opportunity for some additional savings, because we're dealing with a commodity.
Sure.
Understood.
Yeah.
Is it possible? Go ahead.
I would also like to add, we did, you gave us permission, obviously, to look at the load and the load shape, and we compiled the data, and we did send it out for our first bid. And it looks as though you're saving, compared to what you're paying today, are around $20,000 a year on the 9 buildings. So it's a really good time to be in the market, whether you're going short, medium, or long term, and by that, it's 12 months, 24 months, or 36. So we did send it out to a number of suppliers. I think it was 6 or 7.
Mr. Chairman, Lori, will you make that recommendation in terms of, will you give us advice in terms of how long you think we should go out for?
Yes. We will work with you to look at that. And the other piece is, I think we are, again, a full service. We don't just look at your industrial load. We do, which is the city bill, right? We also have the ability to look at your residential load. And if at any point you want to examine how well your contract with NOPEC is, we are here to help you with that also. And we have a lot of information on that. And I believe that I could help your community and foster savings for your community if you have not been able to access it, or have not over the last year. So that's another aspect. We also have an energy efficiency group that helps us make recommendations and help communities find people about it. So we do provide a full service.
Okay. I would like to see if it's possible, Mayor, the contract with FirstEnergy Advisors, and also what we're doing now with what energy companies are supplying, and so we can have a frame of reference when we get those quotes back, if that would be okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I know Councilman Sinish had a question too.
Yeah, just curious to know, how much does the city spend annually on electricity? Is this a $10,000, $100,000, $1 million endeavor? Or what's the total annual dollars we're involved here?
Well, Dennis, I'll give you a chance to think about that while I just know that during this first review, just analyzing, there's a $20,000 savings. So, Dennis, can you tell us what the aggregate it is annually?
No, you know, unfortunately, Mayor, I do not have that that number. I'll tell you what I can. I'll put it together, and I'll get an email out to everyone, and along with the FirstEnergy contract and the information that Councilman Trakas had asked for.
So the finance director might know that off the top of his head. not to put him on the spot, but it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm sure.
Yeah, he does not have that at the top of his head.
It's about $180,000 with the load that you've given us. It's 3.7 million kilowatt hours. And you're paying 4.892 cents a kilowatt hour on that many kilowatt hours. It's about $181,000. And I think we can save you about $20,000 a year on that.
There you go.
For electric, for municipal buildings, municipal properties that were responsible for electric bills, in 2019, it was $402,000. Separate from that is the electricity we paid for the streetlights. 2019, that was $261,000. So combine the two and we're at $663,000.
I believe this review was only for 8 buildings or so. Is that correct, Lauren?
That is correct. Well, 9. So we don't, we could bid all of them. I looked at what you would call an eligibility file that any broker who is licensed in the state of Ohio, which I am, they can get a listing. I can't get account numbers, but I can get a listing of all accounts with the City of Independence, and I see about 60 accounts. And so I know you can not give all these numbers, but we can bid more and support them together, obviously the lower your price. And we could work a little more of those numbers together. And we could separate my account from the electrical a very low priced product that would perhaps subsidize some of your other electric loans.
Mr. Chairman, if council agrees, we can let them continue to work on saving us money.
Is there any objection to that path forward from council?
Okay.
None here. That sounds like a good idea, ma'am.
Well, Dennis, thank you for your effort, and Lori, thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm passionate about this, and I know we can help save you money. I just know we can. So looking forward to working with you.
Just make sure that while we're saving money that the lights will go on, like our friends in California who thought everything could be windmills and solar panels. So solar panels don't work when there's forest fires, right?
Fair enough.
They work much less in Northeast Ohio, unfortunately, because we have a lot of cloudy days in there. They're very inefficient, but
thank you.
Yes, thank you all. I will reach out to Dennis, and we can discuss how you'd like me proceed.
Okay, Lori, I will give you a call tomorrow.
Thank you all. I really appreciate the opportunity to introduce myself and speak with you today.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Appreciate that.
Chairperson Trinkus, I need to excuse myself for another commitment, but I just wanted to make sure I heard this part. So thank you. Have a good meeting.
Thank you. In fact, you leave, colleague, I was going to say Kathleen has asked a couple times that we perhaps bring in NOPEC to explain their program. We're contemplating doing that at our next meeting in September, and maybe we could even have other people who want to present, and so we'll have a little bit more information on this topic by the time it comes up next year. So
thank you.
Of course, thank you. I still owe you 2 phone calls there, young lady, so sorry about that.
Have a good evening.
Very good. Okay, next topic on the agenda is the Don Ram Show with song and dance and soft shoe on the general update on storm flood call list, which was rather extensive in May, and I'm sure he's whittled that down. But Don, the screen is yours.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. I would say floor ordinarily, but it's probably a screen.
Right. Yeah, this is, if you recall, map we put together that documented the calls near 100 back in the March from the events that occurred. And since that time, even though it's been very minor, we've had some follow-up calls. So I think it's safe to say we're around 100 for round numbers. We've quantified them in the different categories. And I can tell you that Joe Patoma in my office has worked diligently with Leon Karas and his team to try to make steady progress on a lot and many of these issues. I would say 80 to 90% of them have been at least initially investigated, and it's still probably 10, 15, 20% we're still need to make some better progress on, but we are marching through them. They're very time intensive. It takes just a lot of resources and energy and focus to investigate to the level that we do on these areas. I've updated the map to bring in some issues that we're going to focus on here later on the agenda. And then we'll also, I'll also be able to provide a little bit more of updates on certain areas of town that we want to make some special note of. One area in from the events of late March was some basement flooding at the turn on Timber Lane and Scenic View. Had some road flooding in this area. And we came to find that this storm sewer, a large diameter storm sewer, was has some debris, significant amount of debris, and from the stream that comes through the highway and enters into a headwall. So we made significant improvements using United Survey and Geotech to clean up the pipe. And we've also, we are working with some vendors to design headwall, a trash rack on the headwall to try to keep the debris out of the pipe, and also put some debris deflectors upstream of the headwall. So those are our plans going forward. We're trying to make some progress on that, but I think we've made a good amount of effort to mitigate this area for the time being.
Don, for us civilians, could you explain what a trash rack is, please?
Sure. I have some slides further down, but let me fast forward. So,
Okay, then that's fine. That's fine. Just get to them when you want to. That's
just
fine.
Big, kind of big cages is really what they are. Big cages to protect the pipes, the holes, the inlets. Here's some debris deflectors. This is right up in Valley Woods. So nothing more than posts to deflect and debris to keep it from entering the headwall, and then a big cage. So these are treatments that are around town, and we're trying to bring them over. Right now, this headwall does not have any of those treatments.
Thank you, understood.
Okay. The next area in question was the Valley Woods issue. We have some major upstream upland flows that come down a steep ravine and really impact these four or five homes here, and then end up flooding the street and impact access to the whole street when the road gets flooded. So we've engaged a civil engineer, Sheeran Valley Engineering, to look at a feasibility study of what we can do upstream to try to manage the water better. And I've engaged them just last week, and we're going to get going on that investigation. We are also trying to treat the symptom in the watershed, circle into, this is Mr. Cevedos' property, so when that stream comes through here, it enters a headwall, goes through a series of manholes and catch basins, and ultimately tries to work its way out to the street. So we consider these to be overflow structures. They're opportunities for when this headwall overflows. We have a manhole here, another inlet manhole here, supplemental catch basin off to the side, and what we'd like to do is to try to improve their efficiency and make better use of them in the overflow conditions when debris gets to the point where this thing doesn't take water. We have opportunities to utilize some of these devices, cages on the structures. We do also want to improve this trash rack. It's just very tight up against the headwall. We think it's coming out a little bit further away. Would make it more efficient to trap the debris, but still allow flow to come in as the water is coming up the headwall. So Joe Patoma has been working with the East Jordan Ironworks, albeit rather slowly. They've taken dimensions, and we're waiting for some drawings of a fabrication of a trash rack. It's just very slow with the virus. It's caused some supply problems in the industry. So we are patiently awaiting that information. but just to give you an idea of what the strategy is here in this neighborhood. Haven't forgotten about it, but we have a plan. So if there's not any questions there, I can keep moving.
Any questions? Please feel free to go ahead, Don.
Okay. Just some more photos of the actual structures. This is the actual rear yard. So this manhole, for instance, sits high above the grade, and we plan to lower it and utilize the cage, similar to what we're going to do in the rest of the yard.
I do have a question on the cage aspect of it. I mean, can you get a cage that gets blocked because of all the trash around it? And how do we clean that? Whose responsibility that is to clean those areas?
So the city has an easement here in this rear yard. So all of this infrastructure is the city's. So certainly it's ours to maintain, particularly to respond to in a flood event. The residents do a fantastic job to keep an eye on it daily or during the storms. So we're all teaming up to do the best we can. But ultimately, it's our responsibility.
Thank you.
Moving on, the Lafayette, this project came up kind of the tail end of our infrastructure project out there. We brought this up at one of the prior meetings. We have a plan to put a new storm sewer in the rear yards of Lafayette, ultimately through the side yards of Latonia. And we're making some good progress on that. We've added some drainage off to the south behind Mr. Patak and Ms. Biggie's property, because ultimately a lot of this overland flow heads due east and really impacts these basements. So between this sewer picking up some rear yard water of these Lafayette yards and also conveying a lot of this water into this system and then around to the side, we think we can really make improvements here. We are working on, here's some costs, rough cost estimates that Katz Construction has agreed to utilize their unit pricing from our alternate bid on Laurel and East Ash for a very similar project that we've completed. And we have money, we have funding, we do believe we have adequate funding to accommodate this with the current budget in the project. We're working on acquiring these property access agreements. Law Director O'Brien helps us put these together. And it just gives the property owner gives us permission and our contractor permission to come do the work. And then also we had a clause in here that in the process of doing this at no cost to the residents, that ultimately we would secure permanent storm drainage easements. That's the area shaded in the pink here. Some residents are having a little bit of hesitation, reservation about the granting of a permanent easement that gets recorded at the county auditor's site and it becomes an encumbrance to their land. So we're trying to work around that. We're not forcing residents to provide us that easement. We would be satisfied if they just give us permission to come do the work and install the infrastructure. So we have three of these out of seven secured. We're working to get the other four. And we believe the contractor is ready to install that pipe. He'll have materials delivered later this week, and we'd like to get going as early as next week or the week after at the latest, assuming we can get everybody's get in agreement with everybody, which we're still very hopeful that we will.
Good.
So without any further questions, I'll keep moving.
Please.
Next item was 4902 East Pleasant Valley Road. There's a significant culvert problem there. And this is to give you just a idea of where this property sits in relation to the surrounding area. It's on the south side of the road, north of Eastview, south of Pleasant Valley. It sits significant ravine coming through here. And we were notified, give you a little bit of a timeline here. The owners notified us around end of April. And since that time, we've been steadily coordinating with them, the Jolliffes. I apologize, I don't know the correct pronunciation after 3 months.
Jolliffe.
Okay, thanks, Mayor. So initially, I met the resident out there, Jeff, to look at the pipe and agreed immediately that there's major problem, that if it didn't get addressed quickly, there'd be turned into something really significant. So we, as a courtesy, we looked, we got Geotech Services, a representative from Geotech out there to assess the conditions. We did also investigate whether this was on a dedicated easement to the city. We could find no such documentation, but we do believe that there's a history of the city involvement with the pipe that's there some number of years ago when it was replaced once before. So working through, we had some rough idea cost, which is upwards of $50,000 initially, and we met with the owners. I met with them on July 8th to try to just discuss an opportunity, public-private partnership that the city might be willing to pursue, what we could, if they'd be interested and willing to have that dialogue and conversation. They said initially they were in favor of it, and so we immediately got some our creek maintenance contractors involved to visit the site, look at it, and we gave them some general parameters to get some quotes, and they turned in some numbers, and ultimately it culminated in receiving a petition from the owners on Monday, August 10th for an assessment project. So I'd like to just, this is an old site plan from 2008 when the modification of the house was made, and this pipe was already present at that time. It wasn't, there was no proposed work at that time because it was in the ground, it was functioning, but I believe it was installed originally in the 80s or 90s. I don't know the exact date, but in responding and looking at what's out there, it's a 5 foot diameter pipe with about 14, 15 feet of cover. So it's about 20 feet from the drive surface down. So there's a good amount of fill over top of it. This is the outlet end, heavily eroded. Magnet failure over a joint in the pipe, and the water is no longer flowing through it. It's eroded through the bottom. Here's some more pictures of the bottom is gone. And you can see here this debris, significant amount of debris and shale. This is the upstream end. It's forced down through this culvert under pressure in many instances. And you can imagine the abrasion that occurs. It's very similar, ironically, to the Patriots Way situation. And so was the mitigation for it. This is the outlet, another good view of the embankment that's failed. We're top of the pipe. So we did secure some quotes from CATS and from Geotech to basically, listed down here, replace the outermost, the downstreammost 20 feet of pipe, and then to then put a field paved invert in all 60 feet of the pipe. And that's really to reinforce the bottom with a concrete paved gutter. It really creates a nice reinforcement of that bottom section of the pipe that does all the, gets all the abuse. So these prices were, I guess construction was $110,000, and Geotech was considerably less than that, upwards of about $60,000. And we feel that can be attributed to, I think, just experience. Not sure how many jobs like this CATS has done. I mean, they're capable, and they probably were conservative on some of these bid items. But we feel very comfortable with Geotech. They performed, again, very identical repair from the Patriots Way project from just a couple, few months ago. So we shared the...
Don, if I...
Yes, go ahead.
If I may interrupt just one second. The more expensive one seems to have gabions. Does the Geotech one offer gabions as well?
No, I mean, the proposal really only called for the rock channel protection. At the outlet, this riprap, this item right here, I think a means and methods from CATS, they felt like having these caged gabions at the outlet could help them with their embankment work to really kind of lock in the embankment. So it wasn't anything we required, but they chose to do it on their own, and consequently their prices were, you know, came up as a result of it.
That's $30,000, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't believe that's necessary?
No. In fact, this treatment is, again, nearly identical with Patriots Way. The only difference is on Patriots Way, it was the inlet side of the culvert that had failed and got blown downstream into the pipe. In this, in on this 4902 property, it's the outlet end of the pipe. So ultimately, we shared these costs, were the lowest estimate with the owners, and received this petition, thinking that we were going to march through an assessment type project where the city would participate. The work would be performed under a city contract, creek maintenance contract, and we would work out some details of the cost participation and the term of the assessment. We did initially think that 25% and 75% cost share would be fair, and that would be 25% city, 75% property owner. We do feel that while it's really providing access exclusively to the drive for the house that sits well back from the road, all the utilities that serve the house run over top of the embankment, over top of the pipe in the embankment, sanitary sewer, gas service, and it does sit situated such that a failure of this conduit and a washout of this embankment could seriously jeopardize downstream culverts under East Pleasant Valley near the 77 interchange. So I do feel like it's prudent for the city to participate and to share the costs in this project, particularly since we have some involvement going back in time on this very pipe that's been compromised now at this time.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mayor.
This is an example of a public-private partnership that you and I discussed some time ago, not necessarily in this venue, but whether it be a house or property to increase property values for those that can't afford it, or a public-private partnership where there may be multiple parties being part of something where the city is the conduit to accomplish it, and our cost would be of a minimal or minimized situation. And this one, because of it acts like a dam effect for downstream, and we've had a number of calls from people downstream that about erosion. And if, like the director said, if in fact it fails, it's going to be catastrophic. So the thought is this would be one of those where we would do an assessment, like we would if it was a house that needed an upgrade for the quality of housing stock in our community. We talked about at one time, I believe our conversation centered around putting money aside into a fund for that type of concept. And we have a number of these projects that were outlined earlier this year that there are a number of residents that would be part of a program, for example, a stormwater issue in the backyard. We have a number of those we talked about or identified earlier this year that if they would all come together, we would be the conduit. We would put it on the duplicate. We would fund it, and then it'd be reimbursed for it. And in this case, the thought was, unless council has a different position, at 75-25, and giving them time to be able to absorb that type of a cost. I think it's another example of how we can extend these public-private partnerships.
Gosh, Mayor, I absolutely agree with you. I think that's a tremendous approach. Does anyone else have a comment on that?
I fully agree with the Mayor and with your ideas, our views, Jim. Excellent program.
I echo the comments. It's a great way to help residents and get a big project done. When there's an assessment, I presume that just kind of pay that back through their property taxes over a period of years. Is there an interest factor on that, or is this essentially an interest-free way for the homeowner to get a project done as well?
They would pay the same interest rate we'd be paying, some market-driven rate, but it would just give them the flexibility, and we wouldn't be, if they sell the house or something happens, then we'd be made whole in terms of our percentage. but the thought was this would be another vehicle. After listening to members of council earlier this year talking about, is there creating something, a hybrid of just going in and doing something and making or asking or getting the residents, the beneficiaries, to participate. So it's, again, it's trying to put all the thoughts that council has collectively voiced in their opinions over the past several months, and we're just trying to come up with vehicles that get these things done, but it's not always at the burden, the complete burden of the city.
I mean, also other observations that, you know, the homeowner gets the benefit of Don Ram's expertise. You know, there's not an added cost for his involvement. I mean, we're just talking about the cost of the contractor, and so the city's contribution is at least 25%, and that's, you know, certainly a good thing. It's good to get this off the list. You know, again, I'll recognize Don's significant contribution to this. That doesn't, it's a cost that doesn't necessarily get charged to this project. And I would also ask Mary, do you see this 75-25 split as kind of the model for all projects going forward, or is this something you're going to evaluate on a case-by-case basis?
Yeah, that's a very good question. First of all, you are absolutely correct in terms of we talked about that, and we felt that the engineering department and all of our consultants, advisors, all play a major role in whatever initiatives in driving some of these projects. We thought that's just something that cost that we would absorb. But it's a template. This is just a template. It could change depending on the different circumstances, the public necessity, but we wanted to get something before council and that we could launch this program with that would gets us a new paradigm and a new thought process.
Wonderful.
Great.
Perfect.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, I would just like to say, in speaking with the residents, I do believe they were invited to the meeting. They did want an opportunity to speak at the meeting, especially discussing this significant project on their property. When they signed the petition, I mean, the 25-75, that was the initial proposal and offer, but they expressed some desire to revisit that split, and I just want to let them have an opportunity to speak if they're on.
Yeah, I believe they're on.
Jeff is yep. On.
We should make sure that Jeff has a chance to speak. And again, this is to launch this program, and however council wants to craft it, I'm open.
Yeah, Jeff, would you like to?
Yeah, and I appreciate it. Hopefully everybody can hear me. Usually I use my phone to dial into Zoom meetings. It's just a little bit different talking through a computer. So I do appreciate everybody's time. I appreciate this getting on the agenda for tonight. Thanks for giving a good overview of what we're looking at. Some of those pictures I haven't seen yet, you know, so it's good to see what it actually looks like inside. You know, unfortunately, it is a 60-inch culvert. You know, we do get a significant amount of rain that comes through here, you know, especially in the springtime with you know, everything up west of us, you know, at Seven Hills, everything's feeding into that. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, with that amount of water, Don, I remember the one day you were out here, you know, the gentleman from, I think it was Geotech or whatever, was actually inside that tube. And an hour later, it started to rain. I sent you a video where that water rose almost 7 feet above the tube. And I had a video of it, and I sent it to you. It just kind of goes to show the amount of water that is coming through there. You know, and it could be a dangerous situation. You know, I have spoken with some of the property owners downstream, and the erosion that they're seeing too is starting to become pretty significant. So, you know, it's just not for us. I think it's going to benefit everybody down the road. So, and going back to Don, you know, we believe it was done in 19. We believe it was done in 83 when that culvert was put in. Was able to pull some information from council notes. Unfortunately, they weren't as accurate as they are today, but you know, we did find some stuff as far as some city payments for a residential culvert back in it was July of 83 or something like that. So you know, as far as the split goes, you know, originally, you know, we're all for it. You know, I mean, doing a partnership with the city. I think the thing that kind of surprised us was really the total dollar amount. So, you know, unfortunately, it is a significant amount for us, and you know, we're hoping to see if we were able to adjust that 75-25 to something different to. A little bit lessen the burden on us, you know, to help pay for that, just because it's not just something that's going to be benefiting us, it's going to be benefiting everybody around us. So, you know, if anybody wants to see the videos of the water, I certainly can send them to you that's coming through that we've experienced. I know in heavy rainfall, and I think it was in the day this collapsed, it was the day we had that heavy rain, I think it was in April, that water was about 3 feet from coming over the top of the driveway. So now, if your estimate was right about 20 some feet, I mean, that water rose, that's how much water that collects in that culvert. So, you know, it is a significant runoff from, you know, upstream for sure. And yeah, so, you know, so you're looking at 14 feet plus another six. So yeah, you're looking roughly 20 feet. And that water is almost, you know, it's about 3 feet from coming over. Only reason why I knew that is because I saw where the water line was. You know, unfortunately that 60 inches is probably not big enough, but you know, on the flip side is it's going to cost a heck of a lot more to widen that and do other things. So we're just trying to get this thing replaced and, you know, shore up the driveway. We're concerned that, you know, the driveway get washed away. We are seeing significant erosion. So I do appreciate the time, you know, today. And again, you know, the thing for us is just because of the dollar amount. Yeah, we're all for a split. We're just hoping to see if maybe we can adjust those percentages to make it more favorable for us.
Very good. Any comments, question on that?
Yeah, don't all speak at once, Council.
I have a question there, Mr. Chairman. Recently, a house was in on Hillside, and they put in a bridge. The house is set back kind of at an angle. So does that mean that we're pretty much then going to be responsible for a fourth of the cost of replacing that bridge then down the road?
Well, I would say my reaction to that comment is that, one, anything that's put in today is properly sized for today's events. And I believe that when we pretty much put them on notice that they're responsible. This was again, I think Don said, or Don said it was a 1983 investment. And I don't think we had quite the level of sophistication that we have today. I do know that one party with the bridge on Hillside after the last storm, they actually got, because of our ability to just immediately on emergency basis, they went in and cleaned the creek and all of it on their property at no charge to the city.
Okay.
So I think, Mayor, what I'm hearing is, go ahead, Councilperson Burke, I'm sorry.
Well, and another kind of a halfway related question. Up on Eastview Drive, there is a home that has a bridge. The bridge basically has failed. Would we bear the responsibility then for replacing, paying 25% of replacing that bridge?
I'm not aware of those circumstances, but Councilman Viverka, what's your position? What do you think we should do?
Well, I'm just wondering if we become involved to any kind of a great degree. I know we avoided this situation with the house on Brecksville Road's drainage issue, and they ended up taking full responsibility for the cost. I'm just trying to get a handle on, you know, how we set up the rules to make it legitimately fair.
Well, I think that anything that affects other homeowners is one criteria. Anything that's been in for 40 years probably presents a different set of circumstances than anything that was approved in the last decade. But if you believe that we shouldn't do anything, then you know, I guess that's a position to take.
Well, I guess my biggest comment is we need to go in a direction that we make sure we establish exactly how it's going to be, so it's as fair as it can be with across the community. So, you know, if we're committing to a particular percent in this situation, basically we've set a precedent for future efforts. So, I mean, that's something we need to consider very carefully.
Yeah, I guess my question is, are you comfortable with this, or do you have a suggestion as to an alternative approach?
Well, considering this is a fairly new thought as far as with me, I've got to think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, listen, this is a concept that we put together based on discussions with council and earlier this year, and it's a way to facilitate some of these projects. It's not going to be appropriate for everyone, every project. Some will decline on the surface, but if there's a necessity and impact on other properties, that's probably the criteria that that at least I would use, and Don's been using. We are very generous in terms of some of the things we do for our property owners over the years. And again, I think this is a strategy. If it was a house that we were working on for a person and we'd want to do a upgrade to keep the housing stock values, I wouldn't participate, I wouldn't contribute anything other than the vehicle to get it done. In this case, there is an impact potentially, as the engineer said, that could affect downstream houses, their properties, and the state of Ohio. So again, each one's going to be a unique situation. Council's going to have to vote on each one, but if you have some input beyond today, after we've had a chance to think about it, this is all about collective discussions.
Thank you.
Am I correct to understand that work back done in 1983, the city participated at that time?
Yeah, yes, they did. I don't recall all the specifics of it, but there was some, yes, there was participation back then. I think we may have done, there was paving involved, if my memory serves me correctly. It was a more robust project.
I see.
When that happened back in 83, that driveway actually got raised when we built the new house. So that driveway probably went up about maybe 10 feet or so. I don't have the exact numbers, but that water came. There was a concrete culvert. It's actually on the other side. You know, I think it's right there. That was the old concrete culvert that was there. So it washed away the driveway. And speaking with my wife's family, owned this house since the 40s. So, you know, and speaking with them, you know, when that happened, it was a storm like that. It just came over, and you know, the city, back then, I think the cost was only, you know, from what I'm investigating and seeing through city council notes, we think it was only like maybe $10,000 for the culvert work that was done. So, you know, obviously times have changed and money has gone up, but you know, that's what was put in. The exact work, we don't have exact records of the exact work, but we do know that the driveway was washed away at that time.
I do know the streets and sidewalks, Chairman, at the time, though.
Well, since the city participated back then, I would think that we should again participate at this point, too.
That makes this a more just situation, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the question that Jeff had for us is there a desire to up the city's participation? Mayor, obviously, you helped negotiate this to a 25% participation rate. You know, so if we put this on his tax bill at the full value over 30 years, that's $2,000 a year, which is not a small amount of money. So I was wondering if anyone had a different thought with respect to the participation rate. So my philosophy on these things always is it's easier for the City of Independence to find $30,000 than for residents to find $30,000. It's just my opinion. I know that we've also provided expertise of Don and his office, which is a substantial benefit. So you know, you have to go out and hire your own engineer. You don't have to go out and hire a firm to do this type of thing. So there's certainly value to that. Does anyone have I'd be willing to consider a higher percentage personally, because I really believe in this type of a program and I like where we're going with it. But you know, if we negotiated 25%, was there a what was the philosophy behind that?
In all fairness, it really wasn't negotiated. It was just inserted because I wanted to get a placeholder. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get something because it's really council's going to make the ultimate decision. I'm flexible, like I said earlier. If, in fact, we were talking more like 15 or 20 years, and if that was the right range of time, and if we went to 40% or something, I'm not going to – that's council's decision. I can help steer it, but I'm not going to get myself all worked up. I'm just trying to facilitate a problem before it becomes a crisis.
I would just comment that there can't be but one or two other communities in Cuyahoga County that would even consider helping out a homeowner in this way. Most communities would go to the homeowner and say, yeah, you got a problem. Here's a phone number for contractors you can call to get your problem fixed. Most city governments in Cuyahoga County and the state of Ohio would not even begin to touch this project at any price. It's the homeowner's problem in most of the world. Now, here in Independence, we're a small community. We take care of our own. We helped this property, obviously, would that be 30-some years ago? So we have some responsibility to come to the aid now in this project. But, you know, we have to be very careful, as this circumstance clearly indicates, of making improvements on private property, because it comes back to get you 30-some years later. And, you know, had we not put that pipe in 1983, maybe the homeowner is just calling contractors and we're saying, sorry, can't help you. So, yeah, the city has some responsibility in this, but we have to be very careful about using public money to make improvements on private property. And again, I'm not, in this circumstance, we've got a major water issue that affects multiple property owners, and you know the threat of failure is significant, and I have no problem getting involved in this one. I really don't, but we just need to be very careful about investing public money in improving private property. And I think a 75-25 split is significantly better than any property owner outside of Independence would get anywhere else in the state of Ohio.
The other comment is we spread it over time too, so it's right. Not as though they have to come up with money and borrow it.
Yeah. And we're looking at about a $60,000 price tag on this job here, of my understanding.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Right, and as pointed out, you know, there has already been some time investment and some other investment as it related to the engineering department. I know that when we spoke about the job that was not done on Rexville Road, there was a significant water study done, and there were some other things that the city provided as to a portion of what they tried to do to be helpful. So, but I agree with Ken. I said, you live anyplace else, and basically you'd be stuck. So the 25-75, if we're going to go that direction, it would be worth considering.
Hey Ken, this is Jeff. To answer your question, I have a good friend of mine in Parma. He's very similar situation, and he had actually brought out some private contractors, and they wouldn't touch it because of it being part of the watershed. So they had to go back to the city, and the city's working with them to get that done. You know, so it is something. I hear what you're saying. It is something that, you know, it's not like it's a culvert at the end of the driveway. You know, this is something that's pretty significant. That unfortunately, right. It's just not coming from our house. It's coming, you know, the majority is coming from uphill and from Seven Hills.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I think you've heard a couple of councilmen. I don't know if anybody else wants to weigh in, or you want to just keep this thing balling. I'll keep it in the air if we can. Yeah. Like to get something more formalized so that we can catch this season and we can lock down this vendor. I think the fact that we've used multiple vendors, we get some, really, we've saved a lot of money by doing this, using this strategy too. And in this case, there'd be a dual beneficiary, be the city and the Jolliffe's.
Sounds excellent to me, Mayor. I think you're going the right direction. And what I'm hearing is that there's a willingness to try to do this. And let's start it out at the $25.75. And then if someone prevails upon a different number, then we could always consider that. This will be legislated. Will be legislated, so we'll talk about that. And I also would say one thing, Mayor. Why don't you and I work on some rules around a program that we could propose, so that there's stated rules that everybody knows what those rules are, and that those could be codified in some way, so that everybody knows how to apply and that type of thing. Would that be fair?
I look forward to the discussion. That'd be great.
Great. Okay. Good deal. Okay, is there any additional topic on this one? Let's go ahead and try to get that for the resolution necessity on the 8th September Council agenda, as well as the change order discussion.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next major problem.
Okay, yeah, this is an issue at 8501 East Pleasant Valley Road. It's the CSA property. And this is just an overview of that parcel. They're immediately east of Kichler. A significant watershed and streams running through their property. We were notified also kind of along a very similar timeline in April of some problems that the management of CSA has started to notice. And it really pertains to this whole ravine east of their driveway. And I think a lot of it stems from a culvert issue under their driveway. So we've been in good communication coordination with representative at CSA. He provided me with some of these photos of the culvert. They've got some issues on the upstream end of the culvert, as well as some open joints under the drive, or in the culvert under the drive. And it's resulting in some subsidence of the soil adjacent to the drive. Some of these photos show the soil is just kind of sliding down under the guardrail, exposing some guardrail posts. There's a large vault, utility vault, that's area around it, and you can see signs of some settlement. And really then the ravine, there's some significant major landslides where whole sections of the slope are just dropping vertically and sloughing off laterally, with whole trees sitting vertical on them. And benching effect is significant. And it's at the top end of that. Top end of this failure is our right of way and our utility easements and our existing new 12-inch water main that runs behind the guardrail here. So this is just a graphic representation of where our water main sits. This material is over top of our main and starting to reduce the cover on it, and it's a situation that's a very serious situation that I feel is warrants some action. And so consequently we've engaged some vendors, but before I even get into that, I want you to know that the management at CSA has taken a large responsibility on their own. They realize that this majority of this issue is on their property, on the ravine. They've engaged engineers and they've got a contractor lined up, and we are working with them to get them the permits they need. They were issued a temporary clearing permit. They need to build an access road and get a drill rig down. They plan on taking soil borings and doing some large amount of engineering work to try to study some solutions to fix this problem. So I don't want to give you an impression that this is a city issue exclusively. Primarily, it's the private properties issue. And they're taking steps now proactively to address it. And they want to do things right. They want to do things in accordance with city rules and regulations. So we've been coordinating heavily on it. But I feel it's so important that while they're doing that, I feel it's critical on our end to also march forward to protect our infrastructure, because if this water main were to fail, it's a 12-inch main under significant pressure, would be catastrophic and could really undermine and expose all the utilities and a roadway pavement on East Pleasant Valley Road. So we engaged a company called GSI, Geostabilization Incorporated. They were the ones who did our first soil nail wall down on Lower Hillside Road. If you recall, opposite Dennis Messina's house, they came in years ago. And we felt that we wanted to see if that similar treatment and repair mitigation technique could be utilized here. And we found that indeed it could be. They visited the site and provided us a proposal. Here's a cross section, if you recall. These are soil nails that get drilled back into the soil. And then a shotcrete wall is built on the exposed face of the slope that's failing. And it's really performed well down there where we've used it on Hillside Road. So this was GSI's proposal, and for a little over $200,000. We also reached out to Geotech Services, our maintenance contractor. They also have experience in this work. They also did another wall just around the corner on Lower Hillside that's also performing very well. So we secured a price from them, and they prepared a similar sketch and treatment, so very similar approach. And we feel that this is something that needs to be pursued. And I just wanted to bring it to the council's attention, because I do believe the next step would be to get it in front of council for some funding, change order funding.
How many years was it that we did the Hillside project?
I would guess every bit of 5 to 8 years. We were back there just recently this spring because of some washout on the GSI wall. And the wall's performing fine. It's just the drainage on the ends was exposing and eroding the edges. So we did have, ironically, I believe we had Geotech come back in there and help us out with shoring up the ends of the GSI wall.
So in this case here, you'd recommend Geotech over GSI?
Correct. Yeah, I think, yes, for the value and correct.
Don, have you thought about moving the water line?
That's something that came up, and that's just going to be an expensive endeavor. I think if this treatment wasn't successful, or if we did this and still continue to see problems, that might be I consider that to be the next option. It just gets expensive moving it into south, into the other utilities and into the roadway. But it couldn't something we would have to look at for sure.
I thought up over a certain size diameter pipe that Cleveland Water is responsible.
Yeah, that size is the transmission mains. And I don't know a specific diameter, but I do believe it's probably 15 or 18 or 20. This is still considered, it's a higher end diameter distribution. I do believe this is still considered a distribution main, local distribution.
Yeah, I'm struggling with the amount of money to spend on, the question is who's responsible? And I'm not saying your analysis is wrong at all. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm suggesting that is there another alternative? Have we examined, have we taken every rock and uncovered it? So, and this is the best guess, or is just one just gets us, facilitates it?
Yeah, this was a quick assessment, and it's a technology, it's a treatment that they can do relatively quickly. 2 to 3 weeks worth of work, and the issue can be stabilized. If not, I know you, Mayor, you asked me and directed me to reach out to both the county to see if they could assist because of the issue with the right-of-way being compromised and potential negative impact to the physical pavement, which is still a county route. And I can also reach out to Cleveland Water just to get their official formal opinion of their participation. We did consider whether or not the whole project was viable for any ORSD because of the either stormwater utility grant, and unfortunately this watershed doesn't reach the threshold. It would be eligible probably for the community cost share, but as you know, we've got that money pretty much tied up for many years on some other projects, so we've kind of added those sort of issues, but nothing too in the weeds.
What if we put it on the agenda while you continue to research alternatives so that we at least we cover ourselves at the September meeting, but if we can find some participation, we can always save money at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm asking the chairman, Mr. Chairman, I'm asking the committee if that makes sense.
It does to me. Other comments?
Was this water main, when we did the Pleasant Valley project, this water main put in at that time?
Correct. Yep. It replaced the old one that was there. So
it was only a few years ago, right, Don?
Yes. I believe that was in 13 or 14.
And they couldn't foresee that embankment at that time, 6 years ago. It didn't look, because it seems awfully close to where you think that they would have picked up on it, that, hey, maybe we should move that water main at that point when we were doing all the construction to begin with.
Actually, where would the water main, Don, be? Right, it's in closer to the posts?
It's right here.
Oh, it's already eroded up on top of it?
Yes, this piece that's jets off further south is already kind of coming over top of the main.
Yeah, so that's critical.
6 feet down. But, yeah, at the time when this main went in, this was, of course, always a steep ravine. But we were not aware of the significant, I don't believe it had significant failures like we've seen here in the last 3-4 months.
Hmm.
That have compromised this upland area.
Hey, Don?
Yes?
Is that water line in? Could have they done anything to start that problem we're having over there? When they dig down to put the water main in?
I don't believe so. I believe that these sort of failures, I believe, are emanating from the toe of the slope, which is where the water runs in the bottom of the ravine. So it's undercutting. The water is undercutting further back. So the culvert, the way it's failed, the stream started to kind of run further south this way because of the way the pipe failed and some debris that had fallen into the normal water course channel. So I believe this water started chewing further to the south, and as it chewed and weakened the toe, that's when I believe all the top load couldn't support itself and started sloughing down. No, I don't believe that the work that was performed up top from the water main installation had any effect on it.
Mr. Chairman, Don, you said CSA is going to be working on that culvert stabilization?
Correct, yeah.
Would there be any opportunities to create some synergies with us to maybe augment or supplement some of our costs for the water line?
Yeah, it's yet to be determined. They're still in the very preliminary stage of acquiring soil borings and doing some engineering. I mean, if we had more time, I just feel I'm hesitant to wait. That's all. I feel like we're betting against time that this might not continue to slough real bad real fast, but we definitely could. They're gonna have guys mobilized for sure. We could definitely work.
So you're requesting that council we put that on the agenda for September?
Yes.
And if we find some way to mitigate some of the cost or do something differently, we'll have that flexibility.
Yes, correct.
And Don, are you asking for this to be passed in September or considered in September?
Well, it's definitely a risk.
Sounds like you want it passed, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I think the sooner the better.
Well, as dry as it is, now's the time to do it if we're going to do something.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think then at that point, once our utility is secured, then we're not dependent then on the timing of this larger repair, and I feel it's we're just much better protected.
Council, how do you feel about this?
Well, it'll be a greater expense if that would be compromised and would damage our water line like that. So I think it's better to err on the side of being more cautious.
You know, the one thing I would ask, Don, when you talk to the water department, say if that thing would break or blow out, they'd come out and fix it, correct?
Well, the initial thing would be to shut the valves off to stop the water from flowing, but yeah, I guess, right. So typically when a water main breaks, it's clean water, it's part of our agreement that they come out and repair it.
So let's call the director and tell him, look, we're trying to get ahead of this.
Correct.
We're going to ask council if he would consider passing this in September, but if we can find a vehicle to manage some of the costs, then we're going to do that, if that's okay.
Sure.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me, too.
Don, can I just ask, so the soil wall, are we talking about something that would be like 10 feet from the street and, you know, very close and very low, or is it going to be at the bottom of the hill and very high?
So it's these cross sections kind of show it. So it's at the very top end. What's unique about these sort of methods. Traditional repair would be to start at the very toe and rebuild the embankment on a very gradual, stable. It's extremely expensive. You recall back when Hillside was failing, and it was $800,000 a number of years ago, and I believe both GSI and Geotech came in, I think, for $50,000 or $60,000, not even less than $100,000. We were able to get those repairs mitigated. So significant cost efficiency to do it this way.
Okay, now I see. You're just talking about 18 feet roughly from the edge of the road to where this wall would be.
Correct. We're pretty much mirroring where the slope is starting to slough down. This is a different view of a different treatment, but yeah, it's at the top of the slope.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, let's give it a shot. September 8th.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Capital projects. By the way, are we on Patriots Way? I know we alluded to that earlier. That has been fixed. Has there been any failures since we fixed it, or is that work done and complete and positive?
Yes, all positive. It's complete. Grass is growing in on the slope, and I do believe we've paid Geotech 100% for that work, and we are in the process of submitting reimbursement or documentation to the Northeast Regional Sewer District. As you remember, they agreed to participate on one, I believe the number was $40,000 or $50,000. So we should be receiving that reimbursement soon on that project.
Great, thank you. Item six.
Okay, for capital projects, just wanted to give you some things that are on the radar here for 2020. The Upper Brookside Road Project Phase 2, we are currently advertising. We finally wrapped up the plans, and we're trying to see if we couldn't get some good prices. The overall budget figure was $1 million of that. There's a significant drainage component, so that's why I'm bringing it up for the Utilities Committee agenda. And that's very similar to even the Phase 1. There was a significant amount of drainage improvements to support the road and the sidewalk project up there. So this is actively being bid, and we hope to be able to bring you some information soon.
One question, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, Mayor.
Is that substantial cost for drainage? Is there a mechanism in that to hold water as part of to mitigate any downstream issues, or is it just to deal with the on-site water?
Correct. This is just dealing with the on-site for the project, but also providing numerous water quality structures for the EPA requirements. But that's not for volume treatment. It's for quality, water quality treatment.
Okay.
And that's really a driver. Each one of those structures is very costly. And I think on this phase two, even though it's only about 1,000 feet from Lake Charles up to Sprague, there are a number of different watersheds, and we have to have, I do believe, 2 or 3 of these devices up there. So that's part of the cost. Moving down through the list, the Hillside Road Sidewalks Improvements Project. Remember, there's 2 of them that we are actively designing, and these are the general cost estimates, but each one of those also has storm drainage improvements components, and that's why I'm just bringing it up on this on this list.
Don, with respect to the all the projects on the screen, have these been, is there money allocated for this, or is this, and we're doing engineering on behalf of that allocation, or are these, we're doing engineering and we have future allocations?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could answer that for Don.
Please.
Legislation, I believe, covered the Upper Brookside project here in August, and legislation also covered the Hillside Road projects, the sidewalk projects. But starting at the next one, Hillside Road Culvert, $2.8 million, Brexville Road Water Main, $4 million, Cleaver Court, Longano, $3.2 million, and the Floodwall Levee Project, $1.8 million. Although all those were listed in the as 2020 items in the 2020 capital, five-year capital plan that was adopted in December, most members of council and the mayor should remember me saying repeatedly since then that there was significantly more projects listed in that 2020 column than our ability to fund them with internally generated cash. So starting with the Hillside Road Culvert Replacement Water Main Improvements Project going down on that list, although they're listed in the capital plan, money has not been appropriated for those projects yet.
I don't remember that conversation, Mr. Finance Director.
We do have some selective memories, Mr. Finance Director, but I vaguely remember that too. Okay, Don, you can continue with all your unfunded, all your great ideas here.
Okay. Yeah, and this is only a snapshot of this, some that were at the top of my head.
You're always full of good news. I know that.
So the Hillside Road Culvert Replacement Water Mains, this job's been on our 5-year plan for some time. It's a really poor, deficient water main from Vineyard, or even from 21 west to the Seven Hills Corp line, and also a poor culvert arch, corrugated metal pipe culvert that needs to be replaced. We did submit last year for a issue one grant program, and we were not selected. So next round of funding applications is coming up here in September, October. We haven't decided yet where we're gonna try to target this again or identify the project, but there's opportunities to secure some additional funding. And this, if you recall, the project that we were concerned about with this sidewalk project in terms of not negatively affecting or impacting, does when this program does come through and the water main improvements come through, that we don't screw something up on the sidewalk. So that's this job.
Don, is the engineering done for the sidewalk from Greenwood Street to Twin Creeks? I know we started that one earlier.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're I would say we're probably 70-80%, and we're trying to wrap it up here early in September, try to bid it out. Still think,
because you think we can get it done this year? I know the one on the west side there from Hawthorne to Great Oaks, the engineering won't be done till November, so
right.
That won't be a project for next year probably. But this sidewalk, because some of the residents had asked me that live there if they're going to see it done this year, this calendar year, if it's going to be something that's going to be next year.
Yeah, it did definitely not go. It wasn't able to move it along as quickly as I initially had hoped for. But we do think it's fairly straightforward. But for getting some buy-in with some work agreements from residents, we don't need any permanent easements, and we think we still think we have a window here. If we get this thing out to bid, that we might be able to still get it all completed or at least get a good start, get all the underground, the drainage improvements in at a minimum.
I see the drainage is far less expensive than the other sidewalk on from Hawthorne Trace down to South Great Oaks. That has, I guess, a lot more things to convey. I think one being a wall, I believe, too, isn't it? That's going to be constructed on the other side?
Correct, yeah, there was a retaining wall, but I don't believe that's reflected in this number.
Not on the drainage, no, but yeah.
Right, not on the drain, yeah, but in this, yeah, yep, in the big ticket. Right. Okay, so moving down forward, this Brexville Road water main improvements, this is from Rockside Road to the Cloverleaf. That was a kind of a full-scale resurfacing, curb and gut, new curbs, aprons, new sidewalks, decorative street lights. We've kind of taken a time out on this project because we're still wrapping up the Breezy contract, and because we're still pursuing and investigating some other opportunities on Rexville Road. But that was a large dollar value. This job would include some ODOT participation, about $850,000, I believe, for the resurfacing because it's a state route. So, I do believe we also had an engineer already on board for this, but we've also kind of suspended that design for the time being. Cleaver Court and Longano, the idea was that once the Brexville Road water main was replaced, then these next side streets that are in very bad shape, that we would right into reconstructing those streets. And they were lumped together because the thought was that we could bid them together as a combined project, or at least a part A, part B, and try to get some good prices. They're not too far from each other. So that was the dollar value. I think we intended to try to get going with engineering in 1 year and then be in a position to bid it and construct it in the next.
So are you thinking, Don, that that's really a 21 project and 21-22 project, or is that how that would work?
Well, depending on how funding is and how this job, the current Fabrizi contract is already replaced the main across the Cleaver intersection, just not the Longano. So they're, you know, depending on, you know, there's some options to look at it different ways depending on progress of this secondary project rolls out on 21.
Well, Longano continues to have water problems every time it rains, so that's why I ask.
Okay. And the water main continues to break.
That too.
Yep. So the last project on the list is the flood study. The PPA is a public partnership agreement. That's with the Army Corps of Engineers. They've drafted a legal document that really commits and binds the parties, the Corps and the city, to the project. These are just a snapshot of the current funding. It's a $10 million cap for these sort of projects. The current cost estimate, total project costs from the Corps tells us it's $7.5 million. And there's a 65-35 participation, and that's the breakdown of that. I only bring it up here because there's been a little bit of traction recently from the Corps. They're looking to get our agreement adopted, or at least committed to, so that they can run it up the chain on their end and really start to get this project lined up and moved forward on the design and the real estate acquisition easements, and just to really start. It becomes a very tangible project once this PPA agreement is executed.
John, we spoke about that about 5 years ago now in detail, and I know Lieutenant General Wagner had his good questions on that at the time. Were we planning on trying to involve Valley View in this at all? Does this impact, I thought it, this impact Valley View, but at the time they weren't interested. Is that still accurate?
Yes, yeah, so generally when the Corps got involved, the study was a much broader in area and did include Village of Valley View, and unfortunately during the cost benefit feasibility study, the projects there were not warranted to continue. So then ours became the sole project that kept moving through the feasibility study, and ours scores extremely high on that cost benefit because of all the businesses and the investment that's down there and the damage that occurs from all crane and all those businesses there. So it's a viable project. The Corps is very interested to move it forward.
Thank you.
So that concludes everything I wanted to share with you on the capital projects.
Any questions on those, Mayor or Council? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just to, Valley View is, the letter that they sent, they're not interested, and at least based on a discussion we had with the Corps, there's really no benefit to them. And it was only after the latest reiteration that the Army Corps was able to convince National Park that they would stay, they would approve, they would support the project. The question boils down to is it's a lot of money. And Don's been working hard to try to cap and control our exposure before we approve. So if he's successful at that, knowing we're dealing with an arm of the federal government, it's going to, I would be more embracing of this project.
Understood. Yeah, it's just always been an expensive one and doesn't affect a lot of people in town. I mean, it does, it would be beneficial, but it's not like it's in the residential area or in a larger street than the commercial district either. Okay, well, we'll continue to talk about it then. And Don, if there's anything you do along those lines, that'd be great. Is there any discussion of private participation in any of this? It benefits a lot of those businesses.
Yeah, I don't believe, Mr. Chairman, that that's, we've engaged I mean, there's participation from the standpoint of the real estate, the acquisition for easements, whether or not it's compensatory or whether or not they'd be willing to donate some of that, the value of those easements. We haven't gotten into that yet, but it'll definitely be discussed at the appropriate time.
Very good. Okay. Any other questions for Don?
Just a quick question. I know the last meeting we had that list of residential drainage concerns, and I was curious if any of those were advanced forward to being dealt with.
We are constantly pecking away at the list. Obviously, we're focusing on sanitary, focusing on basement, we're focusing on those that affect houses. Where we're scratching our head a little bit is the fact that there's a lot of drainage issues that kind of need a different strategy.
Yeah, so we had about, we had close to 100, I think we were talking about actually after the investigations making recommendations, and maybe that comes a little bit later on, but particularly we had that DORA project from last year. I mean, we were still looking at that. Is there any, we were going to try to make some recommendations to them about perhaps a culvert in the back there. Was there any progress on that, Don?
Yeah, so I think that's maybe Councilman Vavirka was referencing. So when a lot of these issues we've been aware of it on our radar screen, so we've prepared a numerous number of alternate bids that were really like rear yard neighborhood projects. And DORA was on there. There was the Midland Highland area was one, and there was quite a few of them. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to spend a lot of time and energy on those to reach out to the neighbors to maybe have a dialogue to see if getting back to the public-private partnership concept. I think ultimately that's where it needs to go, but we've been unable to have that play out yet.
Well, that's fair. Well, maybe we can give you some clarity to that in the coming months here, and perhaps that could be something we can work on and strive towards.
Okay.
Our next agenda item is, we're just about concluded. Is there any other items that might come before the committee? Okay, hearing none, I would, Mayor, is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, Mr. Chairman, I thank you and members of council and, of course, Don Ram for his in-depth analysis on each of these. And I appreciate, we'll make sure there's legislation, and I appreciate any additional feedback as we move forward on some of these. So thank you very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. Hearing that no other agenda items, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn at 6:15 p.m.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, please signify. Well, actually, the clerk will call the roll.
Trakis?
Aye.
Sinek?
Yes.
Vavrka?
Yes.
Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you for another productive and entertaining meeting.
Thank you.
Good job, fellas.
Thank you.
Good job, everybody. Thanks, everybody.